and she'll be talking about high yield of new HIV diagnoses in patients with high viral loads from Partner Services in Philadelphia.
Thank you, Dr. Golden. Good morning. I'm just going to jump right in. So a little background on the city and county of Philadelphia. Philadelphia is the fifth largest city in the United States, and we have a substantial syphilis burden. In 2012, we were ranked number 11 nationally in terms of number of syphilis cases, and we also have a substantial HIV burden. In 2012, there were approximately 30,000 people living with HIV/AIDS in Philadelphia. And of course, as does everyone, we have a core population that's very affected by both diseases. In 2012, 91.8% of our PNS syphilis cases were male. 72% of our male PNS syphilis cases self-identified as MSM. And of these, 69% are known to be HIV co-infected. However, at the time, our STD control program and our AIDS Activity Coordinating Office operated completely independently. There was no routine data sharing, and we operated completely independent databases. So we also operated completely independent partner services for HIV infected. We had separate DIS. There were only two DIS at ACO for all HIV cases that they ran in Philadelphia at the time. And HIV surveillance data was not used for initiating partner services. And STD control had no access to the EHAR surveillance database that ACO used. However, HIV partner services was performed by STD control for HIV cases that were diagnosed in our public STD clinics, for cases that were co-infected with chlamydia, gonorrhea, or syphilis that were referred to us, and for the occasional case that was requested by entities such as an insurance company. And it was unclear to us what the outcomes were for HIV partner services that we performed, so we wanted to look at that. So in the immortal words of my program manager, Melinda Salmon, check your partner services paradigm at the door, because HIV is a little bit different. All right. The definition of HIV partner services yield. The yield typically, and the last wonderful presentation is helpful in this, the yield of partner services for syphilis can be defined as new cases found and contacts that are epi-treated. But this really has to be different for HIV. HIV is a different disease. It's not curable, and the infectivity of HIV varies throughout a patient's life. So, as we know, HIV transmission is highly dependent upon viral load, and people with undetectable viral load very rarely transmit HIV. So a better question may be how many infectious people are encountered during the provision of HIV partner services, not just looking at new positives. So a better endpoint to determine the yield of HIV partner services should probably be the number of cases with high viral load that are linked to care. But for this study, which was retrospective, the number of cases with high viral load or the number of new cases of what we looked at. But either of these endpoints are really hard to do if the HIV status, the true HIV status, or the viral load is not known to the partner services personnel who are actually performing partner services. So our methods are pretty simple. We looked at partner services interviews performed in 2012. We pulled these from the database by our wonderful epidemiologists. And we looked at the outcome of the partners of the HIV cases. Partners were either classified as unable to locate, refused STD exam, or accepted STD exam, essentially. And then the match was performed with the EHAR surveillance database by ACO staff. And we did an identified person-based match. We looked in the database, and we confirmed their HIV status. And then if it was positive, we looked at the viral load that was drawn closest to the time of interview and recorded it. We defined in care as at least one CD4 or viral load in the 12 months prior to interview. A detectable viral load was defined as greater than 50 copies per ml. And it's kind of funny, we had to actually carry the data by hand back and forth from the STD control to the ACO offices because we had no way to securely transmit data. But that was okay because it's really pretty walk. Okay, so our results. This is HIV on a cell. Let's talk about the original patients for a moment. So looking at EHARs in 2012, there were 750 persons who were reported to have new HIV diagnosis in Philadelphia in 2012. STD control initiated partner services for 509 HIV-infected persons. And it turned out that 156, or about 31% of these, were new cases diagnosed in 2012, and the rest were prevalent cases. 131 cases of the 509 were diagnosed at one public STD clinic. 447 of the 509 were successfully interviewed by STD control. Of these, 226 persons with HIV gave sufficient locating information for at least one partner. So we had a total of 529 partners named. And just to tip your memory, we classified these partners as unable to locate, refused exam, and accepted exam. And within those who accepted exam, there were previous positives, previous negatives, and those who never tested. And that is all by self-report. Okay. So I'm just going to drill down some data now. It's going to go a little fast. For those who refused exam or were unable to locate, of the 529 partners, 109 of them refused exam, 59 were unable to locate, and 50 refused exam. When we cross-checked these in EHARs, 13 of them were HIV positive, and of these, 8 were new positives in 2012. So if you ever wanted to know what happened to those people who didn't accept your services, that's what happened to ours. In terms of those who accepted exam, 420 of the partners accepted exam. Of these, 304 of them were previously HIV tested from self-report. All right? But then we looked in EHARs and we found that 300 had previously HIV tested by self-report. And then when we looked in EHARs, we found that 250 of them were previously positive. The remaining 54 had stated that they were negative, and there was no evidence of them in EHARs, so we're taking their word for it that they were previous negatives. 116 of these partners stated that they had never HIV tested, which I thought was high. So, of those who accepted exam and were previously positive, there were 250 previously positive of people with HIV verified in EHARs. Of these, 189 of them were engaged in HIV care. And then of those, 138 of them were virally suppressed, but 51 had a detectable viral load. And of the 51 with a detectable viral load, 20 had a viral load of greater than 10,000. And there were 51 persons who had no evidence of HIV care in the database. This slide is a little more complicated. These are people who accepted exam and stated they were previously HIV negative or had never been tested. You'll recall from an earlier slide that 116 people said they had never tested, and 54 people said they were negative and they had no evidence of HIV infection in the database, and that's 170 people. But 182 people got their exam and tested after the provision of partner services, meaning that there were about 12 HIV patients who didn't disclose their serous status to the DIS, and I don't think that'll be a surprise to the DIS. Of the 182 people who tested after partner services, we found 19 new cases of HIV. 16 of these were Philly residents. 3 of them were out of jurisdiction close by. Of the 16, 11 had a viral load of greater than 10,000, and 7 had a viral load of greater than 100,000. Okay? And of the Philly residents, 10 linked to care within 1 month, 2 within, I guess that's 8 months, and 4 have not yet linked to care. Oh, I should also say that we looked for people who had had a subsequent test after this test in the database, and we found within the year of the people who tested negative after partner services, 7 more of them seroconverted later on in the year. All right, so the total yield we found, 70 of the 529 total partners that we elicited were cases of HIV with a detectable viral load. 31 of them had a viral load of greater than 10,000. And by the other rubric, we found 19 new cases of HIV. 55 of the 529 partners were additional cases of HIV without any evidence of care. So we had a few other insights. Our public STD clinic identified 131 of the initial HIV-positive patients that we identified, and they were the largest single source of HIV-positive patients in the city that year. The primary risk factor for HIV-positive patients was MSM status. That's not a surprise either. But a good insight from this is that there was a real discrepancy between the parallel databases. There was much more detailed data on risk factors and behaviors in the STD control database, but there was far more accurate data on serostatus in the AGO database, and of course, viral load data was not routinely available to STD control at all. So in conclusion, our HIV partner services was already operationalized within a very high morbidity group of people. We're on the ground dealing with these people right now. And our HIV partner services was able to find 125 partners with either a detectable viral load or who were not in care at all, despite not using HIV surveillance data to initiate partner services. So I think that we think that the goal of HIV partner services could and probably should be to find those with detectable viral load or those out of care, but that our DIS could be really excellent linkage agents to HIV care as they're already deployed in the community and they're already speaking to these people, they're already finding them. But due to competing priorities, the DIS would only be able to do this if additional funds became available because we just don't have enough bodies on the ground to do it. So some next steps. Our STD control and ACO partner services staff are now integrated and supervised by STD control. And STD control is attempting to find a way to use DIS to connect and relink HIV positive persons to care, but as I mentioned, their resource constraints. We could use a viral load in an algorithm to stratify the urgency of partner services. And in order to do this, we're working to streamline coordination of the two databases. Currently, we have EHARS access available via twice weekly telephone call, but we're working towards health department accreditation, which would permit STD control to have EHARS access, because then the security and confidentiality standards would be uniform across all programs, and then we could have access. So, can we use HIV partner services to decrease transmission in the community? My daughter thinks we can do it. So, I have to acknowledge people who are really my co-authors on this: Melinda Salmon, Greta Anschutz, Robbie Madera, Michael Everhart, and Kathleen Brady. And thank you very much. Gotta catch a plane. Yeah. Right. Dr. Golden, you have a question?
I have a question. So I'm psych, I always have a question. A common thing with HIV partner services is that many of the people who are newly diagnosed were actually notified by the index cases prior to the DIS interview, and the way the disposition codes are collected, it looks like they're new positives identified through partner services, but actually the patients did it themselves.
Okay.
Did you have any ability to look at that in these data here?
No. In a word, okay. We didn't look at that. But I think I'm not sure that's necessarily the case in our population. We would have to look at it, but my gestalt is that that's not necessarily the case.
The only places I've looked at are Seattle and San Francisco, which are probably the most similar cities in the United States,
and
so I'm not sure we could generalize.
Which are highly dissimilar to Philly, I gotta say. Yeah.
Questions?
Hi, Amelia Hammerman from the New Jersey Department of Health.
Oh, hi.
Right next door.
Oh, hi. Yeah.
I'm just curious, and I don't know if you can really speak to this, but if there's any, because we have some similar structural similarities in that, you know, our STD program and HIV are separate, and
Right. We're
trying to be more integrated now.
Yeah.
And did you have any sort of pushback from the, you know, the management, as it were, from STD and HIV as to that prevented more integration of partner services between the two programs?
I think historically we had. And I mean, I think that was based on the fact that, and rightly so, that HIV is very concerned with protecting the privacy of their patients with highly stigmatizing information. But I think as time has gone on and as we realized that an individual patient now benefits a lot more from early intervention and not just a population, I think that people's attitudes are changing, right? So now with treatment as prevention, an individual patient, it could be argued, would benefit from notification of them and early identification of new positives because it'll benefit them personally. So I think you can maybe address the pushback in that way.
Right.
It's not just a population prevention intervention. It benefits an individual, and I think that has been a historical and real concern of HIV.
And it hasn't been the funding, different funding streams hasn't been an issue as far as the STD sort of supervising the HIV DIS staff.
No, they're helping with that.
Okay,
which is good because they have way more money than we do. Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Gustavo Quino. I'm the Associate Director for Program Integration at CDC.
Oh, great.
Hi. So I want to commend you for doing this analysis. I think we would benefit from a lot of jurisdictions doing exactly this kind of thing. And trying to explore and find out how to improve a specific function. It's such a critical function of our health department. So great job. It strikes me, however, that if I understood correctly, one partner per index case seems like it's that common for any of the other jurisdictions. Or if you look at another disease, are you finding the same? Is it, you know, in the interview? So there may be some room for improvement in that area.
Yes.
My question is really around the fluidity of data between the programs and how it allows you to be timely and responsive to identifying a case
mm-hmm.
and going out and trying to reach out. Is that something that took days, weeks, months?
I think it would be days. I mean, it's dependent upon when we get the lab date, but
okay.
we try to be as timely as possible. We're not using surveillance data to initiate partner services, so it's still
okay.
through referral. It could be made more timely in that way. But to sort of speak to your comment about the index, you know, most of our cases are MSM, and a lot of people just have no access to their partners. They don't know who they are on purpose. That's
yes.
part of the point. So I don't think that necessarily one-to-one is, it just depends on who's doing what.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what are your next steps? Where do you go from here?
So we're definitely going to get EHARS access into STD control, and I think that we're working on then going to probably do a priority grid for integrating syphilis and HIV partner services as a unit and making trying to discuss what the highest priority case would be and then how our DIS would be able to drill down and prioritize these cases. And then finally would be discussions, I think, of whether or not it's appropriate to use surveillance data to actually initiate partner services, which has been a point of discussion.
Thank you. That was a nice talk.